VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I'm speaking to you from Warsaw with the latest game podcast from Euro 2012. We're just about at the most exciting part of the tournament when the duds and also some rather big fish are getting knocked out. Not quite sure which category Russia and Holland fit into, but today we got two guys who are going to help me figure it all out. It's Peter Lansley from the lovely town of Lviv, and up from Gdansk, it's Rory K. Smith. Gentlemen, because England are playing, we need to start with England. And Peter, I want to start with you. Wayne Rooney is back. Now, during the England game, I tweeted out this question. Okay, so Wayne Rooney comes back from his two-game suspension. Does he drop Welbeck or does he drop Carroll? What will he do? What should he do? A bunch of people came back to me and said, no, he needs to drop Young instead and go 4-3-3, which I don't expect he'll do. What's your take, Peter? Who would you drop to make room for Rooney?
Well, I can understand why people said that on because of Ashley Young's disappointing game the other night. But, I mean, that's one disappointing game in several where he's produced exceptional moments, and he's been very much on form until then. Plus, as you say, I can't see Roy Hodgson suddenly going 4-3-3 or having Wayne Rooney in the hole behind an attacking two. I can't see that. I think Danny Welbeck is probably the better striker to start of Carroll and Welbeck with Rooney just off. Welbeck runs channels very well. His link-up play is excellent. His touch is good. He's got a goal in him, obviously, now, and what a goal. And Andy Carroll, although I thought he had a very decent game on Friday, would be the better one to come from the bench if necessary.
Rory, are you on board with that scenario, especially given the fact that, I mean, let's face it, Ukraine need to win. They're a very attacking side anyway, the Ukrainians are, so it might sort of play right into Uncle Roy's counter-attacking plan, if that's the way he wants to go.
Yeah, I think England have got quite a sort of difficult task, for all that they'll have a massive confidence boost after beating the Swedes, that to go into the final game against the hosts, with the hosts knowing that if they win, they go through, is a fairly daunting occasion for England. I think Peter's absolutely right. I think it'll be Welbeck that starts. The club link-up, I think, will be probably the most important factor in that. Both Welbeck and Carroll played reasonably well against Sweden. I don't think we should pretend that either of them were sort of, you know, the new Pele or whatever, but they played reasonably well against Sweden. Welbeck probably shades it on the grounds that him and Rooney got 30 goals together, I think, for United last season. So there's obviously a sort of an understanding there that maybe they wouldn't be quite as easily with Rooney and Carroll. But on the other hand, I've got to say it's harsh on both of them, the fact that Rooney has to come back, you know, Rooney comes straight back in. I think if you were a club manager, you maybe wouldn't do that after that result, after both your strikers have scored and your best player is coming back from a suspension entirely of his own making. A club manager maybe wouldn't do that, but obviously Hodgson, you know, it's do or die, so he kind of has to. So I've got to say, yeah, I think it will be well bet, but I feel kind of sorry for Carroll.
You mentioned that. I'm told here by our producer, Chris Skinner, and I don't know because I'm not in England like you guys, that Roy Keane wouldn't pick Wayne Rooney for this game. So you're sort of on the same wavelength, or do you actually think that, as you said, because it's a tournament, it would be simply idiotic not to pick your best player, and might explain why Roy Keane is in a TV studio and not managing at the Euros.
Yeah, I think Giovanni Capitani has been pretty damning of Roy Keane's managerial career at some point yesterday in Poznan. And I think it wouldn't be idiotic not to play Rooney. I think it would be cutting your nose off to spite your face not to play Rooney. But I don't know, I kind of think it is harsh on Carroll or Welbeck, whichever one gives way, that Rooney, who missed the first two games because he kicked a Macedonian for no reason. And although he's come out and said, oh, you know, I've grown up and I've apologised, you know, the proof of that pudding will be in the eating. I think it is harsh on one of them. They play well, they score in a sort of rousing victory, if not a sort of all-time classic performance. And then they get dropped because he's back. Obviously, the practicalities and the pragmatism of football mean the best player comes back into the team. But I just think, I do think if it was a club side, you'd make that player get his place back rather than just handing it back to him automatically. Hodgson doesn't have a choice. You have to play Rooney. England has to play to win, because as you quite rightly say, the Ukrainians will attack. They're a good attacking side. They sort of crumbled a bit against the French, and they know that they've got this sort of swell of national support behind them. But so Rooney has to play. So you have to have your best players on the pitch. But it's unfortunate that it's come to this, I've got to say.
Wouldn't Rooney be a hell of a game changer to have on the bench? It's too big a risk, though.
Peter, you're out in Ukraine. Rory and I are in Poland. And what struck me is, you know, at a lot of these games, and maybe it's the crappy economy that across Europe, but it looks to me like Polish fans snapped up a whole bunch of unsold tickets and decided to go to the game as neutrals, but you know, clad in Poland shirts and Poland and Polish flags and scarves and whatnot, and singing Polska, Polska. Has that happened in Ukraine as well? And in general, what's the mood been like? Because from over here, we see all these sort of blonde people in yellow shirts getting all very excited. Is it translated sort of throughout the towns?
Yeah, it is. It's been like having a three-team match sometime in the city centre, as you know, as you say, as the Ukrainians have been getting involved. And I've also seen some. I was going to which game was it the other day? And there were some Lithuanians. I just stopped to ask the way on the metro, and some Lithuanians all had England shirts on, and they were getting involved. That was quite a weird one. I can't think why they were doing that, but. Yeah, and like last night's game, Germany v Denmark, was all but a sellout. So yeah, I think it has caught on with the neutrals. I think they've been very involved. Obviously, if Ukraine go out, that's going to be a real testing point for the tournament then. But hopefully the football has been of sufficient standard and they're able to get tickets sufficient, you know, not too expensively, so it'll carry on.
Roy, From the neutral's perspective, and we have to assume that there are a certain number of our listeners who might not be England supporters, imagine that. From the perspective of the tournament, it's one of the things we often say is that, you know, if when the hosts go out, you sort of lose some steam. Now, obviously, at the World Cup, South Africa went out early. This time around, Poland have already gone out. Now, we know Peter's an England fan. I don't quite know if you are, certainly probably not as big an England fan as Peter, but if Ukraine go out, will it be bad for the tournament as a whole, or do you not buy into those types of arguments?
Well, no, I do buy into it. Yeah, I mean, I don't support England, so I am a relative neutral in these matters. I think it would be good for the tournament if the Ukraine went through, because I think it would be nice to have one of the hosts through. It would actually have been great to have both Poland and the Ukraine, because what you get when you have the host there in the quarterfinals or in the latter knockout stages is a sort of a building sense of anticipation, and the hope starts to come in. It's not to say in Poland, I've not been to Warsaw for a few days, but certainly here since Poland went out, the fans are still out in force. There's still a lot of singing in the streets. There's a lot of sort of joie de vivre, shall we say. It still feels like a tournament, which it didn't initially. So obviously, the Poles have bought into it, and you know that tournament spirit's going to continue. But I think it would be great for certainly the Ukrainian half of the draw if the Ukraine went through. I don't think the Poles would be supporting them particularly, I've got to say, which is kind of the weird thing about this tournament. But Yeah, it would. I think it would be positive for the tournament if the Ukraine went through. So you have that entire nation sort of really, really excited about the knockout stages. I don't know if they will. But Peter's absolutely right. It's a test for the host nation. When you go out, how do you respond? Poland have responded really well. The flags are still flying and what have you. The Ukraine, I don't know, they will go out. If they get to the quarters, they won't go any further. So that point will come, but it would be good, I think, to delay it just a little bit.
What is the Ukrainian for Joie de Vivre?
Did you not take those audio English-Ukrainian lessons that the paper handed us out? I guess some of us are more professional than others. But, Rory, you touched upon Poland going out. I thought those were pretty incredible events on Saturday night. Greece defeating Russia, Poland losing to the Czech Republic, Poland and Russia going out. I want to get you first, Peter, actually, on this business with the head-to-heads. Now, the reason we use head-to-head as a tiebreaker is to avoid screwy situations like we've had in competitions past where you've got one team that's out of it and they don't care, and so they'll concede like 50 goals because another team needs the goals to pad out their goal difference. And so that's why we go with head to head. Of course, head to head can also lead to some pretty sort of bizarre looking results, as we've had in years past as well. I mean, but ultimately Russia and Greece end up on the same number of points. Greece advance, Russia go out. Is that fair?
Is it fair? Well, it's set up beforehand, isn't it? It's where the goalposts are. So I think in that perspective, it is. There was a little, just to digress, there was a little phase last night when the score was coming through from the Portugal-Holland game where a draw would have suited both Germany and Denmark, and the lull in the game was perceptible, but I don't think we seem to have been getting to the sort of fixable situation. Was it Austria v Germany? Was it a couple of decades ago? I don't think it's unfair. No, I think if you've done well against that opponent, then you deserve to have the edge.
It is a complicated system, and the permutations of it are slightly sort of Byzantine, and that is a drawback. I was sat in the German press camp about 2 or 3 days ago, trying to work out how on earth the Germans went out last night. There was a combination of results that put the Germans out, and as it turned out, it was a lot simpler than we sort of perceived it to be. But the combined might of the British and the German media trying to work out what the straws needed to be that Germany would definitely go out took about an hour and a half, which is an insight into journalism's stupidity. But the fact that it's complicated aside, it's had one very simple effect, which is that pretty much all of the games in the final round of the group games have something riding on them, and that's fantastic. And there have been points over the first 2 days, and it'll be the same tonight, I'm sure, with the Italians and the Croats and the Spanish, where I think every team has been about to go through, apart from Poland, I think. But at some point over the course of the 2 days, every team has sort of had one foot in the quarterfinals because of the various combinations of results, and that's really interesting. And I think it's worked very well. The test comes in the one eminently fixable fixture, which obviously is Spain against Croatia. The Spaniards and the Croats are sort of adamant that the idea that they'll draw 2-2 is nonsense. The Italian players are insisting that they're not even thinking it's going to happen. But then I think everyone said that before Sweden and Denmark in 2004.
The tournament says goodbye to Russia and their lovable fitness coach, Raymond Verheyen, who spent much of the time on Twitter telling everybody how wrong all the other teams were in their approach to fitness and how their players were all too tired and too injured. But then, of course, funnily that, it was Russia who looked absolutely spent and exhausted in the second and third games. But let's not go there. I'm sure Raymond Verheyen will pop up somewhere close to us at some point telling us about the wonders of periodization or whatever the hell he calls it. Sorry, that was just my little rant about somebody who annoyed me. But let's talk about somebody else who won't be going ahead.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
At the tournament, and that's Holland. Roy, I want to start with you. Holland go, they lose to Portugal on a night then where Ronaldo sort of proves the doubters wrong, at least for 90 minutes. We've sort of talked about Holland and how the defenders are all awful and midgets, and how the strikers don't work together, and you know, and how before last night when he played Van der Vaart alongside De Jong, there was you know, no midfielders who could pass the ball. Does this mean that we need to reflect on the fact that maybe 2010 Holland weren't that good and we're just kind of extremely lucky to get to the final? Or is this a case where Bert van Marwijk just simply screwed everything up for the past 18 months?
Well, I think their record in qualifying probably suggests that the latter's not the explanation, given that they did not win all their games in qualifying and they looked sort of imperious. And I think they were playing much better football than they played in South Africa. I think the problem for me with the Dutch was that their defence obviously is slightly weak, but the main issue was that there was no sort of joint between the defence and the attack. There was, at times it looked like they were sort of playing 4-1-5 with Nigel de Jong just sort of wandering about, sort of playing in defence, as though there were two entirely separate teams, and the Germans exploited that gap and the Portuguese exploited it, and they were unlucky against the Danes. I think the Dutch, though it should be said, in a different group, their tournament would have been very different, because they have played two of the best teams in Europe in their group. And I guess that's the thing about, I think, a group of death, isn't it, that someone has to go. It can't be the case that everyone gets through. So the Dutch can consider themselves slightly unfortunate. It looked like a lot of their old ghosts returned to haunt them, in terms of, I mean, Arjen Robben played a ridiculously selfish brand of football for the first two games. Van Persie and Huntelaar last night didn't really sort of link up at all. I barely noticed either one was playing. Schneider played well. He's probably the main positive. But I just think that they didn't have as much of a team ethic as the Germans or the Portuguese, and that's been the crucial difference. And they're in a group where there could be no margin for error. That's the problem.
Peter, we touched upon Ronaldo there. He was kind of mocked after the last game where Portugal won, and yet he seemed upset at the end because he didn't score and then he fluffed some very good chances. I thought he was exceptional last night. Is Ronaldo somebody who's just always going to just divide opinion because of the way he looks and the way he plays and whatnot? But can that be enough to carry Portugal far in this tournament?
I think he always will divide opinion, even within an individual. I mean, I love the way he plays football. I love his brilliance, his cockiness, his willingness to try the unexpected. But on the other hand, I think his attitude to his teammates when things aren't going right is horrific. I'm sorry, I didn't see last night's game. I've just seen a quick clip of the two goals, but but on Wednesday, he just needed someone who he respected to pull him aside after the game and say, for goodness sake, this is about the team, mate. This is about, you know, you making other people feel good if they have inferior talent to you. And that was really irksome, and I think he deserved everything he got. But then he came up with the goods, doesn't he? And that's just how brilliant he is. Now, can he make the difference? Yes, I think he can, because I think they're quite a functional team, Portugal, apart from Nani and Ronaldo. But if he's on fire, then, well, he's as good as anyone in this tournament, isn't he?
I have a grumpy German friend, let's call him Wolfgang, just for our purposes, who complains that Germany tried to attack and whatnot, but he says that among the starting front four that Joachim Löw puts out there, they have one guy who can pass the ball straight in Özil, and that, you know, the other three are just kind of runners and lumps, and that he should actually play more of the skillful players he's got coming off the bench, like Götze and Reus and Schürrle and Kroos and whatnot. I mean, you watch Germany. Is my grumpy German friend just being sort of grumpy and annoying, or does he have a point?
His standards are far too high. That's all I can say about that. Right. I agree with you. I think Germany and with Spain are the standout. And I just wonder if Germany might have more in their locker than Spain as well. There is more variety to it. I think the front three ahead of Özil are superb. I thought Podolski was purring last night. He was playing within himself, and yet I got a cab home with someone from Arsenal, and they just, you know, cannot wait to see how he fits in. They're strong, they're powerful, which is why you might say those front three are runners. But their link-up play, when Özil comes and joins in, or Khedira just sort of, that seems to be one of the differences between the Germans and the Dutch, playing the same formation. But Khedira and Schweinsteiger can come and join in comfortably. And, you know, their touch on the ball, their little diagonal passes as they're approaching the penalty area are just of the highest quality. So, I think, Denmark aren't the strongest team in the world, but I think Germany are looking awesome.
Rory, are Germany the best team you've seen in the tournament? And are they getting better as the tournament progresses?
I think the Germans are. I think they are on a par with Spain, in fact, in terms of how impressive they've been. I take the point that your grumpy German friend has made, and I think that there are times when you look at Gomez and you think he's too static. There are times when you look at Thomas Muller and you think his control's not brilliant. There are times when you look at Podolski and you wonder whether he is sort of top quality. And when you've got players like Reus and Götze and André Schürrle at Bayer Leverkusen who are in the squad and who are willing to play, it must be difficult for the Germans and for Jürgen Löw particularly to think, right, well, who am I going to stick with? Because they've got all these choices. The speed that the Germans play football, and I think the crucial thing that means they are the standout team alongside Spain, is that you can take one part out and the system stays the same. And the speed with which the Germans break is just breathtaking. It really is. There was one point during the Portugal game where Jerome Boateng sort of just haired forward from a counter attack from a corner, and you had Podolski and Özil was just flying at the Portuguese defence, and it ended up with the third man in attack was Jerome Boateng, and he had a shot and it sort of screwed wide and it sort of broke up the attack because it was Jerome Boateng. But the speed that they play at is much more impressive, and at the risk of saying something stupid, I think that in a straight fight, that very pensive, contemplative Spanish style and this sort of breakneck German style, I think the Germans would win.
I think teams have worked out that you can't defend high up against Germany because of that breathless counter-attacking that they can come up with. But when they had to be patient against Denmark, as they will against Greece, they showed such authority, they showed such patience, such composure on the ball, that I think they can play that way as well as what Rory rightly said. So I think they've got it all.
Okay, we're going to wrap this up by giving some props and some credit to two teams, two underdogs who are through to the quarterfinals and who I think, you know, few would have predicted ahead of time. I want to start with you, Peter, and ask you about Greece. It's almost too easy to go out there and draw parallels between the vote on Sunday, the elections and events Saturday night when Greece improbably advanced, and drawing parallels with 04. Now, I don't think there is any parallel with 04 because certainly not in the way they play, and certainly not in the fact that they've been lucky, because I think Greece have actually been very unlucky. But It is a great story, isn't it? Greece advancing once again.
Yeah, it's a great story. The style of football isn't... I mean, it's been such a high standard football this tournament, hasn't it? And Greece just give us that little stubborn relegation battler who... we all love the underdog. I loved it when they won in 04. I felt like, it showed that anything could happen. Any team could come through. But and everyone seems to be saying that this tournament, don't they? Well, if Greece could do it. I don't think they'll go too much further. I don't think Karagounis is the... 35 is he or whatever. I don't think he's the same influence. I think he's a bit of a poser as well, actually. And I don't see much pace going through an attack. I think Samaras is ponderous. Gikas doesn't look like he can do anything apart from score the odd goal. And of course, they're playing Germany. So while it's a good story, I can't see him going any further.
Well, Karagounis, of course, suspended for the Germany game after... And I'm going to say this now because I've been really good. I haven't picked on referees, but that was a scandalous decision. He deserved a penalty. Instead, he got a booking, which means the Greek captain will miss the game against Germany. And no, I don't think Angela Merkel had anything to do with that. But Rory, the other team, the Czechs, talk about under the radar. On paper, you looked at this Czech side and it didn't look like there were any... big stars or rising stars to talk about, apart from people like Peter Cech and Rozicki and Baros, who we've kind of, been familiar with because we've been seeing play for the past decade. We just all kind of assumed, okay, well, they'll probably go out as Poland and Russia advance. They got their behinds handed to them in the first game, but they came back, two victories in a row. Are they better equipped to spring a surprise? Can you see Peter Cech just turning into a monster, saving everything, and somebody, Jiříček or Gabrielas or somebody nicking something at the other end? Are you prepared to go out on a limb?
It's possible. I think, as we discussed previously, the Portuguese have one individual who is head and shoulders above anything else on the continent, to be perfectly honest. Maybe Xavi and Iniesta would dispute that, but to me, the Portuguese they're not perfect. I think if the Czechs were playing the Germans or the Spanish, you'd obviously just say, yeah, fine, that's your lot, quarterfinals, can't really complain. I think there is a possibility that the Czechs could surprise the Portuguese. I don't think they will, but of all the likely quarterfinalists, I suppose, apart from England or the Ukraine, they're the ones they probably have wanted. They're a good team, the Czechs. There's not a single name there, especially without Rozicki, who looks like he won't play in the quarters. There's not a single name that you look at and think, wow, great player, sort of even an up-and-coming superstar like an Eriksen, someone like that. There's no one in that Czech team who really grabs the imagination. But they function, they're solid defensively, they've got an intelligent midfield. I thought David Lindbergh looked fantastic against the Poles. I thought the way he controlled the midfield was really impressive. They've got Milan Baros, who's not to everybody's taste, but he's a runner and he's a worker. And defences don't like playing against people like Milan Baros. So I think they have a slim chance of going through because they've got a relatively kindly draw. But I think generally with the Czechs, it's just impressive that they've got this far after that awful opening game. And it's testament to Michal Bilek and the work he's done.
And I like Gabriel Selassie as well. I didn't see the second game, but when I saw him in the middle game, he looked fantastic, racing forward from right back. He looks a star.
That's right. Gabriel Selassie, of course, a famous last name and an Ethiopian father. I'm sure he's one of those guys, though, who's probably getting bored by all the long-distance running stroke marathon references. Gentlemen, it's been a fantastic tournament thus far. Hopefully it'll continue at the same standard. I want to thank you both for being with us, and I want to thank our listeners as well. I'm going to be back in 2 days' time. In the meantime, you can visit thetimes.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter. You can download our iPad app, which has all kinds of whistles and bells and fancy features. It is worth checking out if you haven't done so already. In the meantime, thanks for joining me, and bye-bye.
Hold up. VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.